This podcast was recorded on 28 February at 8 p.m. Things will have changed by the time you hear this. Enjoy the program.
From On the Level Media, I'm Jeff Hutton. This is Reformasi Dispatch.
From the Reformasi Weekly Service on Indonesia, this is Kevin O'Rourke.
Kevin, so it looks like Prabowo Subianto's presidency might be getting off to a sour start. We're going to be talking about the potential of a censure coming up. It's a little bit of signaling and may not do anything, but what does it do? It sets up, you know, that maybe, the presidency or the election wasn't on the level.
Affect perceptions. It'll affect perceptions. And, that's what matter, you know, perceptions of stances of politicians, perceptions of attire.
Well, speaking of perceptions, there was a bit of perception signaling there by choice of a necktie.
Changed the entire outlook for the country.
With his attire.
Yellow necktie means that Joko Widodo apparently plans to take over Golkar.
Such as the musings in Jakarta. And finally, collaborative farming, not collective farming. No, October is not a reversion to year zero, where Kevin's going to be sent out into the rice fields to learn what it means to work hard like a peasant. No, collaborative farming to get the cost down for school lunches and, the ultimate goal there is to reduce stunting, but there's been some musings about collaborative farming to reduce the cost of school lunches, and it seems a little bit alarming.
Yeah, a little bit mistargeted.
Well, let's get into the news of a censure. What does this mean? And it's kind of interesting coming from Ganjar Pranowo, who was involved in 2009 censure. Of SBY, is that right?
Correct. Yes, for the Bank Century scandal, it was actually focused on the vice president at the time, Budiono, who's arguably the best public servant Indonesia has ever had. But be that as it may, it's neither here nor there. So ultimately, in theory, a censure process or hak angket or the parliament's right to query the government can, on paper, lead to impeachment, but in this case, it will not. And in fact, even if it did, it would impeach Widodo and would have no effect on Prabowo. So, the ultimate endpoint of this is immaterial. It would never get anywhere near that. But just because of the breakdown of parties in parliament and the legislature, and also the involvement of the constitutional court, so it's not about that. Contrary to some misinterpretations, what a hak angket in this case would do is simply trigger a query in parliament that would examine the process of the election with regard to malfeasance. And I think it would focus in on the ethics of the constitutional court verdict that rendered Gibran Rakabumi eligible for vice president. It might also shed light on the stances and positioning of Joko Widodo vis-a-vis the Prabowo campaign. It would just help focus some constructive scrutiny on the facts, potentially. So that's the proposal being put forth by Ganjar and supposedly by Megawati also now. Well, that's still not fully confirmed, but the effort would still need support from two other parties, namely the pro-Baswedan parties, three of them, actually, PKS, NasDem, and PKB.
Right. What kind of threshold do they need in order to get an investigation going? They need 50% plus one?
Only 50% plus one of parliament seats. So those four parties could do that without the small PPP. That one is a pro-Ganjar party that has renounced the hak angket. It's going to be pro-Widodo instead. But those four parties could initiate hak angket and carry it out in a special committee in parliament. So Remains to be seen whether NASDEM and PKB remain solid or if Widodo is able to dissuade them through cajoling or whether the parties succumb to potential intimidation.
Who would they be censuring? The KPU or the Widodo administration in general? How does that work?
It would be the president for allowing this all to happen. Yeah. It could be the KPU potentially, but I think they would focus on the role of the president and.
This is the legislature saying we don't like what the executive did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yep. And it's basically a signaling move, but there's nothing can happen. I mean, they can't reverse the results of the election, I guess, or impeach the sitting current president. I mean, that's
no,
really,
no. It can't happen. That can't happen because going towards impeachment would require a trial in the Constitutional Court, as well as eventually a 3/4 majority of the combined legislature, the NPR, and the breakdown of the legislature is anywhere near that threshold. So what this does is just affect public perceptions and potentially take away a little bit of the momentum that Prabowo will have behind him upon taking office as president, to the extent that there's clarity and some opprobrium or disapproval of the way in which his ticket came about. The second thing is that it will delineate the stance of PDIP, which until now still is unclear whether it's a pro-government party or an opposition party.
Right. So if the PDIP gets on board with a censure motion, then clearly they're not too keen on joining the governing coalition.
Correct. Yeah.
Is this a pronose? Is this Ganjar's baby? How much buy-in has there been from Megawati?
It is, yes. And so that's part of the criticism. There's figures in NASDEM who have been denouncing Ganjar for having put forth the idea for Hak Anket, given that Ganjar is not a member of parliament. So they're saying it's not his domain to say so one way or another, which is sort of a technical point, but it indicates maybe some reservations within the ranks of NASDEM that could be significant. Mm-hmm. As for Megawati, Torang Mulia Lubis, friend of the pod, made a statement this week saying that she is behind an Hak Anket, but no one has heard her say that she's behind a Hak Anket. It's just a third person.
Right. No one has heard from Ibu Mega on this, or indeed whether she wants to join governing coalition. It sounds a little bit like she is gathering some leverage. That would be a sort of cynical look at this, wouldn't it? Like, I not only do I not want to join your stinking coalition, I might censor your government, depending on what kind of deal you can give me. No?
Yeah. Playing hardball. That's right. That's what happens. And unfortunately, the levers are mostly in the president's hands.
Yeah. Speaking of the president, is there any sign of buyer's remorse on the part of the public with respect to their incoming president and the role of the incumbent in helping elect that current incoming president?
Perhaps hard to tell. Don't think so yet on the part of the public. I mean, there seems to be clearly just this really strong popular mandate for Prabowo, which ultimately really is quite clearly because of Widodo's endorsement of him. Whether there's any dissent between Prabowo and Widodo is going to be interesting to watch. And there's already issues coming up with regards to appointments and budgeting in particular.
That was my next question, actually. Prabowo has a hefty mandate, a very clear mandate to govern, and some political capital to spend. Has he given a sense of how he wants to go about spending that political capital with the appointments? Maybe finance minister? I don't know.
Yeah. There's lots of rumors circulating around that everybody's heard about Widodo getting X number of appointees in the cabinet and so on and so forth. And there's no way to know what's accurate. But the two we discussed last week made for the coordinating security minister and the land affairs minister, and that seemed to be sort of one for each side there.
Yeah. It's still kind of early days, right? There wouldn't be.
Yeah, it's going to be a long
time. It's just a couple of weeks since the last election. When do you think the dust might settle?
Well, I mean, this hack ANCAP process could be a part of that too, actually, because it's possible that it could elicit a reaction from Widodo whereby he finally ousts these half a dozen or so figures associated with PDIP from the cabinet and from some state agencies. And if so, then the problem, quote unquote, with that for Widodo is that it creates all these vacancies that he then needs to find a way to fill without getting into fights with all his various supporters and allies. And so it becomes a messy process. He might just want to avoid it. But there could be a substantial reshuffle if Widodo feels it's necessary to retaliate against PDIP for the hack ANCAP. It's just going to be...
Sorry.
Speculation. Yeah, otherwise, though, it's just going to be speculation until October.
Is there a shortlist emerging with respect to the new finance minister? Are you hearing anything?
Well, I think there's a trial balloon sent out by the Prabowo camp. They told Bloomberg that there's four names that have come up. I wouldn't attach too much credence to it. And this is something that's going to receive a lot of speculation in the months ahead. And it's going to be a long time before there's clarity. And I think that the people releasing this trial balloon are doing so just to gauge market reaction and also assuage markets and tell them what they want to hear. And it doesn't necessarily reflect the reality of what Prabowo himself prefers. But Budi Gunadi Sadikin, the health minister, is one candidate because he had been in Bank Mandiri for a long time in the past. Tiko Wiryatmojo, who's a vice minister in the state enterprise ministry, is another former head of Bank Mandiri. There's Roiki Tumular, is the head of BNI, another state bank. And then the fourth one is an interesting one, is Mahendra Sirigar. He's already got a job. He's the head of the Financial Services Authority, the OJK, but he's a bona fide technocrat. Those are just some of the names that come out. All good names, but I don't necessarily think particularly realistic.
With international recognition, Srima Yani had the clout of the World Bank posting before. It came with a lot of confidence of the international investment community. Any of those names have traction? They pass muster at all?
Yeah. Yeah, those are, some are more prominent than others, but Mahendra Sirigar had been ambassador to the U.S. and he's the one who has the most stature for sure. Tiko Wiryatmojo is head of the largest state bank, is somebody else who's very much respected by markets. So that would be no problem from that standpoint. It's just an issue of ultimately, is the finance minister going to be able to stand up to the president, or will the president overrule them on a regular basis and disregard their counsel? That's the deeper question that's going to remain unclear until next year.
Well, ever since the financial crisis and the banking crisis, Indonesian presidents have been loath to touch the finance ministry. They don't tend to overrule. They keep them at arm. There's almost like an independence that they want to signal to international finance that those are a safe pair of hands. Those are the dry ministries. But you worry that there might be a change in tact in this regard, like the dry bureaucratic ministries, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. That's right. Yeah. Because this goes back more than 50 years, because it was something that Suharto instituted after the hyperinflation of the Sukarno period. So it became a convention for Indonesia whereby the government featured strong technocratic ministers in not just the finance ministry, but multiple key economic ministries. Yeah. And that gave a lot of confidence to the international markets that helped finance Indonesia's development. And to this day, that's a really important attribute or asset that Indonesia enjoys. But it's potentially ephemeral. That's very much at stake right now because Prabowo won't necessarily abide by these conventions. And one of the specific conventions is that the fiscal deficit should be kept under control. And that was always the case throughout the Suharto period. Then subsequently, there was a law passed that featured a note, an explanatory note at the bottom as a guideline that the deficit should be no more than 3% of GDP. And so this is the thing that markets focus on. They think that there's a 3% cap on the fiscal deficit and that going beyond 3% of GDP.
I remember that. Spending, deepest, darkest we tipped over 3%, right?
Right. Yeah. So there's actually no repercussions to it. It doesn't require an amendment to the Constitution, which is one thing I heard. It's in fact something that's just in a law, and there's no penalty for violating it. So it's just merely a guideline.
And merely guidelines. No need for,
yeah.
Like driving in Bali. Guideline.
Yeah, stay on the asphalt if possible, preferable, not necessarily.
Well, it's an opening bid. So if you wear yellow, it means you're going to take over a major party, right? Yellow tie.
Indubitably.
Take over a big block of seats in the parliament.
How could it be otherwise?
This is not a choice of the sartorial choices here.
Right. Well, Widodo is potentially looking at a future in which he and his family have no stakes in politics via seats in parliament, which is the cornerstone of power for all these top political elites who chair parties like Megawati and Prabowo and Erlangga Hartarto with Golkar. PSI was the solution, and Widodo's younger son, Kaisang Pangarep, took over that party about 8 months ago and promoted it. But it looks as if it's going to fail to pass the 4% parliamentary threshold, such that it will have zero seats in parliament. It will have a sizable 8% stake in the Provincial Assembly of Jakarta, the DPRD, but nothing in parliament. So therefore, maybe the family will be looking at other parties that it can take over. And one that leaps to mind, there's been no discussion of this, but it seems potentially feasible, could be PPP, known as PayTiga. That's a small party, though. It'll probably barely have 4% of parliament, if that. But the problem there is that it is an avowedly Islamic party, so it would require some rebranding, which would be difficult because that's one of the original parties from 1973. So the other idea apparently now is Widodo might make an attempt to take over Golkar by joining Golkar now and then maybe somehow becoming a candidate for party chair when their next party chair election comes up, which is really right around the corner. It's December of this year. So,
well, now is when you better start politicking for that. Outgoing presidents do like to have their political vehicle all lined up. Megawati's got PDIP, SPY has got Partai Demokrat. What does the political party do for the Widodo clan?
It's everything. Yeah, without which there's nothing. If you've got seats in parliament, then you're involved in everything. Plus, you can also get seats in the cabinet. So, yeah, it's pretty major. And Golkar is big. They're going to probably be the number two party. They have even a chance, I think, to surpass PDIP and be the number one party. It kind of depends on how the remaining votes break down in the vote count and how the seats get allocated, because it's not really a one-to-one basis. Some seats are easier to get than other seats in terms of votes. Interesting prospect.
If Widodo takes over as the chair, you could see Gibran coming over too and setting Gibran up for a presidential run if not next time, the one after, I guess.
Right. Problem is that Golkar is a very tricky beast in more ways than one.
The party of Suharto, nothing less.
Yeah, and they had a real deep rupture between Abu Rizal Bakri, the former chair, on one hand, and Agung Laksono on the other hand. And the winner was Setyanavanto, who then went to jail, and Erlanga Hartarza took over. But the rupture is still there. And one of Prabowo's biggest financial, one of Prabowo's financial backers is Abu Rizal Bakri. So he'll be making a push to become party chair again, I would have thought, or his son. And on the other hand, there's also Bambang Susatyo is out there. He's the speaker of the combined legislature, the NPR, and he's the foremost proponent of doing away with direct elections for president, which might fit right into Prabowo's plans. So there's a lot of other interest at stake, and Widodo joining the party won't necessarily be well received by everybody in Golkar. Not to mention Erlanga Hartarto himself, who's been just rigidly loyal to Widodo for the past 5 years at least, and as a form of thanks, he'll be, you know, shunted aside.
Where is this coming from? I mean, it's surely it's not just because he wore a yellow necktie at one point.
No. Basically, there's a reaction from the most staunch pro Erlanga elements of Golkar, such as MKG Air. That's a subcomponent of Golkar, and it reacted to Widodo's choice of necktie by affirming its loyalty to Erlanga. So it's, yeah.
you're really getting into the tea leaves there.
Yeah.
Sifting through the go-kart tea leaves.
I know it may sound silly. But
I'm sorry,
it's real. I swear it's real.
I want listeners to hit that 15-second repeat button. Hit it a couple times and listen to Kevin's statement again and again.
I stand by it.
It's getting late on a Wednesday. Yeah. We're having our own fun. All right. And so collaborative farming is on the cards, yeah, in order to drive down the price of school lunches. Huh? How does that work? What is collaborative farming, Kevin?
Yeah, this is coming from Budiman Sujatmiko, who in the 90s headed the People's Democratic Party, the PRD, which is a party whose banner had the Marxist emblem on it, and so it was repressed by Suharto, and bookending that, I guess. Now he's advocating collaborative farming, which is totally different from collective farming. That's
But you can see how there's some parallels there.
It's a remarkable coincidence, maybe, I guess. Yeah. But in any event, he's not the person who is going to be calling the shots for Prabowo's free school lunch program or nutritional support program. Budiman Sujatmiko is somebody recruited into the Prabowo campaign from PDIP. So he was a high profile defector from the Ganjar camp. And he generated some headlines last week talking about how the next administration is going to bring about free lunches for all school children without blowing out the fiscal deficit. And so Sujatmiko's proposal was to source food directly from communities and farmers and producers and local fishermen and so on. And he calls that collaborative farming, and he estimates that that will halve the cost to the government of furnishing this nutritional support in schools. That's the extent of it. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, more about that yellow necktie. Okay. The ideas behind free school lunches are noble. The incoming Prabowo administration sees them as a way to curb stunting. However, it's a little bit like shutting the barn door after the horse has fled, because it's kind of late once the youngsters get into school. This is something that happens. Well, it happens in utero, right? Kids can get stunted because of malnutrition of the mother.
Yeah, reducing the rate of smoking might be one way to go about it. You know, there's lots of different
heresy.
Interventions that can.
What?
Heresy. There's lots of. sanitation, another one, clean water supplies and vaccinations, clean air. Yeah. But it's really important to target interventions properly based on science and data. And really, it's actually
no place for sloganeering.
Teenage girls who suffer anemia, that's an intervention that helps because pregnancies tend to happen very early in Indonesia, and so postponing marriages until the couple is 19 years old at least, and that helps too. But basically the point is that if the focus of the program is going to be providing additional food, free lunches for children in school, it's not going to help stunting, because by the time they're in school, the kids have already suffered the full effects of stunting. So that support will have arrived far too late. So it's a potential serious waste of resources because of the extremely high cost of doing this on a national scale. It's wasting resources that could go to effective interventions instead.
Okay, we're going to leave it there. No interview this week. Thanks a lot, Kevin.
Okay, thank you. See ya.
And that's the pod. Our editing and sound engineering is done by Stephen Handoko. Our music is courtesy of the Blue Dot Sessions. For a free 2-week trial of Kevin's Reformasi weekly newsletter, go to reformasi.info. You can support us by donating at buymeacoffee.com/reformasi. If you have any questions for any of us, or if you have ideas for people we can interview, why not email us at hello@onthelevel.id. And if you are listening to us through a podcast app, please hit subscribe. It'd be a huge help. This podcast is a production of On the Level Media. I'm Jeff Hutton. Bye for now.